has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. If we just let it be, the world won't get no better. We gotta change it, girl, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass?
You're tuned to WSOU 89.5 from the campus of Seton Hall, and we are live. Better known as Quest Youth Radio, Quest Community Vibrations. Sit back, relax, drink your more than Joe, because it's Quest Youth Radio. Good morning, and don't you go anywhere, keep it locked. We're going to talk about the topic this particular weekend, celebrating Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Don't you go anywhere, keep it locked.
If we just let it be, the world won't get no better. We gotta change it, girl, just you and me. Change it, yeah. Change it. Can't do it alone. Can't do it alone. Need some help, y'all. Can't do it alone.
a new way. They're the ones that suffer each and every day. Teach the children,
teach the baby,
teach the babies,
teach the children. Show me what you need to say. Maybe we should write a letter. Said, dear Mr. Man, we don't understand why poor people keep struggling, but you don't lend a helping hand. Matthew 5:5 say, the meek shall inherit the earth. We wanna be down that way, but you've been tripping since the day of your birth. Who said that to kill is a sin? It started at Bresenko War that your people been in. Who says that water is a precious commodity? Then dropped a big old black oil slick in the deep blue sea. Who told me, Mr. Man, show feel just the same. Ain't nothing fair about welfare. Ain't no assistance in aid. Ain't nothing affirmative about your actions till the people get paid. Your 1,000 years are up. Now you got to share the land. Section 1, the 14th Amendment says no state shall deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Mr. May, we want to end this letter with 3 words. We tired of y'all.
You are cooked soup.
And good morning, Tamar Davis. Good morning.
Good morning.
You know, I'm so glad that you're here with us. And you know, when I thought about you for this particular day's broadcast, I pretty much had you in mind as an authority on references. You know, when we talk about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., many times people, you know, refer to "I Have a Dream" speech, and they don't realize that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. had more than one relevant speech. And so I'd like to ask you, start out by asking you, speak to the different, if you can, speeches that Martin Luther King has made that were maybe more significant to the people in the United States, particularly people of color.
I think that with the changing dynamics of the world during that particular time, Martin Luther King's speeches had to evolve with that particular reality. If we look at and examine his assessment on the war on Vietnam, in Vietnam and its impact, you would see that he spoke to the political reality of that time and its impact of what was taking place all over the world. Some of the things that he had said in the speeches was dealing with the economic disparagement in America and its impact all over the world. And so his speeches had to change to impact what was taking place in America and so on and so forth. So he had numerous speeches, and so that's just the reality of what he was saying. If you listen to the war of Vietnam speech, and in the speech of when he made the statement of insufficient funds, or not being able to cash a check as it relates to us and as it relates to blacks' economic reality, it speaks for itself, and it's still the same reality that exists today.
Okay, so first I want to thank you for that. And as we continue on, you know, one might ask, well, who is this guy that Dr. Bombay has on this morning? And what gives him credence, relevance? What gives you the authority to speak? And I want you to pretty much throw your credentials on the table and introduce yourself again.
Well, I'm Tamar Davis. I'm a librarian, but not only am I a librarian at this point now. Some of my colleagues and myself, with Foremost Films, we are finishing up a film on the meeting of Martin Luther King and Honorable Elijah Muhammad that had taken place February 24th, 1966, and in that meeting, in that whole film, it goes into not just Dr. Martin Luther King's speeches, but it also goes into COINTELPRO, FBI, some of the different differences in of the movement, the African American movement, progressive movement. It talks about what had taken place in Chicago. Stokely Carmichael, there were so many different players that was involved with the progressive movement of African-Americans in America in 1966. I mean, if you look at the beginning aspect of the correspondence between Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Martin Luther King from March 1958 and March and April of 1958, and different correspondences on that particular time, it talks about the need to join and have a cohesive relationship, a united front for the black movement in America.
Okay. Now, what are some books that, you know, we could look up and research and read on our own? You know, because we live in the age of abundance with social media, you know, giving half of the information, and people don't particularly like to read anymore. But for those readers out there, what types of books or books written by Martin Luther King, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., would you recommend?
Sure. There's numerous different books. I would read Taylor Brandt's book entitled Parting Waters, America, the King Years from 1954 to 1963. Pillar of Fire by Taylor Brandt, America in the King Years. Coretta Scott King, My Life with Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King Jr., the book written by Cornel West. Testament of Hope, The Essential Writings and Speeches of Martin Luther King, which is written by Martin Luther King, Martin Luther King Jr. Martin Luther King Jr. and the Civil Rights Movement, Controversies and Debates. So there's a whole list of different books on Martin Luther King. I think it's important to understand the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. It's important to understand so many different people that was involved, so many different ideas, so many different philosophies, so many different strategies that was taking place, and controversies as well, as it relates to Dr. Martin Luther King and his impact as a social activist leader, as a preacher, as a father, as a man that was trying to engage in positive aspects of change in America. One of his mentors, Benjamin E. Mays, was very impactful in his at Morehouse, very impactful in terms of his not only spiritual awareness and educational aspects of theology, but he was also impactful of giving him a great sense of direction. Theology and Christian leadership was an integral part of his family, you know.
Now, what are some characteristics of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. that you found to be very interesting to yourself personally?
I mean, his ability to be able to stand up and speak his mind. And do it in such an eloquent way that the whole world listened to his impact. And then one of the things that's important about Martin Luther King is not just, you know, males that was impactful, from James Farmer and all. So there's a whole lot of people that was very important in terms of Martin Luther King, but I would think Ella Baker is a very, very key person, not just for Martin Luther King and also the bus boycotts and what have you, but very impactful of not just mentoring Martin Luther King, but mentoring a lot of the leaders of the civil rights movement, from Bayard Rustin on. It's a whole slew of people that Ella Baker had mentored in terms of social change in America.
Okay, so they say that if you're in the room and you're the smartest person in the room, it's time for you to change rooms. So would you agree that Martin Luther King was in different rooms with different people that may have been a little bit smarter than him, with no smoke towards Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. whatsoever.
Well, I think that everybody was on the same wavelength in terms of the need for to engage in strategies and tactics of the movement. And people had different approaches and different debates and different arguments and of how to move the liberation, freedom liberation movement forward in America. And then it wasn't, the movement became not just a national reality, but the civil rights movement in America impacted the whole entire planet. It impacted London, it impacted, and everybody was looking at the freedom movement in America during the 50s and during the 60s.
I remember a speech, well, not necessarily a speech, because I've actually participated in actual marches and walks, but I remember Amiri Baraka saying, a lot of people did not understand or appreciate Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and especially his nonviolent aspect to protest. And he said that at that time when it was going on, that he didn't appreciate the nonviolent part because, you know, contrary to a lot of belief, there were a lot of people in the black communities that didn't believe in turning the other cheek. He said, but as he got older, he realized the brilliance in turning the other cheek. He said Martin Luther King realized that we, in our communities, we didn't have tanks, we didn't have guns. We weren't going to fight the man, so to speak, on that turf, in that kind of way. So it had to be an alternative. So can you speak to, if you can, the nonviolent approach of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.?
The nonviolent approach was a violent approach. You see what I'm saying? You could aid and abet your enemy in thought, word, and deed. And so we didn't have the resources, financial and otherwise, we didn't have the resources to go against this Vietnam situation, this large, prodigious situation of liberation struggle. Let's look at the people that had attempted to engage in armed struggle and what happened with those particular individuals and what was the impact, how did it impact their families, so on and so forth, stuff like that. And even although he was nonviolent in terms of his tactics, he still died violently. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So the fact that he died violently and didn't live a long life, long peaceful life, to at least see his children and grandchildren grow, his whole thing was extremely dangerous. To have the law enforcement and the counterintelligence program actually monitor him, to bug his phones, to listen to his key people, what was taking place. And this was money that was actually spent and resources from taxpayers' dollars that was actually spent to circumvent the threat of Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King was considered one of the most dangerous men in America by William Sullivan, who was the chief of the counterintelligence program for the FBI. So, and he died violently. So I would think that his speech was significantly impactful and concerning and also alarming to say that the United States government have a check that was actually developed for blacks that was insufficient funds because of the fact that we engaged in tilling the land, laboring for the slavocracy in this country. So it was dangerous. He was the most watched person in the country during that time.
To be nonviolent. To be nonviolent.
And to die violently. And to die violently.
So what do you say to people who celebrate this particular weekend in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King and, you know, the commercialization of it all? How do you address such things?
I would say that let's take an assessment and see how many agents, okay, not just here, but collective resources of intelligence from agencies, whether you're talking about BOSS, which was another police agency during that particular time, where they had African-American agents inside the organizations, engaging in counterintelligence methods to be able to thwart these threats of liberation struggle. Dr. Martin Luther King was only asking for equality and justice. That's all he was asking for. He didn't ask anybody to pick up any arms. So to have concerted efforts of ongoing resources that was like put together in a concerted effort to stop him, problematic. I would say, in my opinion, that Dr. Martin Luther King was, in many instances, far more dangerous in saying the same thing in so many words as Marcus Garvey.
Okay. All right. So, any last words as it pertains to this particular weekend? And first of all, let me thank you so much for getting up so early to join us and to give us a point of view and a point of reference and let us know about who you are and what you're doing. What's going to be the name of that film before you give your last words?
Well, the film is entitled Two Sons of Georgia. And because both Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Dr. Martin Luther King were born in the state of Georgia, we felt it was important. The team, Brother Hafiz Fareed, Kelly Seisenstein, Rich Woods, and myself, we felt it was collectively important to have a discussion or do a piece of intellectual property, a film, a documentary film, that can have people begin to ask questions about the meeting. Because a lot of people don't realize that Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Dr. Martin Luther King actually met February 24, 1966 with Coretta Scott King in the room in Chicago.
You know, many people would just yell out, we want our reparations and that'll be the solution. But we haven't actually solved the problems of people understanding the differences of people who were brought here against their own will. Chime in with your last words, and I thank you again.
Thank you for allowing me to serve. I think what people need to understand is I think reparations is a very important argument to consider, right? But what's our strategy, and what's our plan, collective plan, And how is it going to be executed? You know, is it going to be something similar to the Bureau of Indian Affairs for that actually set billions of dollars aside for those Native Americans that were disenfranchised up for their land and resources and displaced all over the country, they were displaced. Those particular individuals, there's people that's still benefiting from the Bureau of Indian Affairs fund that's in place. So my question is, I mean, I respect Randall Robinson and his argument on reparation, and there's a need for reparations because we are an integral part of building this country. The main resources that helped build the country was the labor. And that labor, in many instances, came from the African Americans that actually were enslaved in this country to do so. But yet we have yet to have received any significant land or resources to be able to move forward. And then at the same time, with our plan to maintain cultural continuity and political empowerment, once, if there is such a disbursement of funds to African Americans. So what type of plan and strategy we have in place collectively, and what tactics we're going to use to actually bring the argument before the government to say, well, these are resources that we need collectively, and we need it because we're entitled to it based on this historic evidence.
We're going to let those be your last words for this morning, for today only, because we'll hear more from the Black Librarian as we move down and move forward in the progress of our programming. I want to thank you again, Habari Ghani, brother.
Oh, Habari Ghani. And the other thing, Asante Tana, another thing I like to say is that we are doing a film screening of The Two Sons of Georgia on January 20th from 2 to 4 at the Mount Vernon Public Library in Mount Vernon, New York.
Give us that address and give us that information one more time.
Okay. It's a filming of Two Sons of Georgia whereby it's going to be a panel discussion. It's going to be in Mount Vernon, New York, address Mount Vernon Public Library, Mount Vernon, New York, 28 South 1st Street. Again, 28 South 1st Avenue in Mount Vernon, New York, January 20th from 2 to 4. At the library, there will be a discussion about the film The Two Sons of Georgia.
And this is going to be free.
This is going to be free. Free and equal access to the public.
Okay.
For the public.
Yeah, you and I could just keep on going, but we have another guest coming in shortly, and so I want to thank you so much, my beloved brother. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Listen.
Are we all alone or all one?
Are we all alone or all one?
Impossible. I'm possible.
Listen and be silent.
There is symmetry in every mystery.
In every mystery, there is symmetry.
Heaven on planet Earth.
We must elevate to levitate.
Remember, stress built backwards is desserts.
There is a lie.
There's a lie.
There's everything.
To be funky, fun is the key.
Fun is the key.
You can't be great without a tear.
In a question. A part, a track. Free is in farewell.
Listen.
And be silent.
Can you pull the sword from the stone?
I want to say I was educated and informed that indeed blues is the roots and jazz is the fruit. And I am honored to have Antoinette Montague, jazz woman to the rescue. Ain't gonna let nobody turn us around. Good morning, Antoinette, and thank you for hanging in and waiting and being patient with me this morning.
Oh, bright moments. Happy Saturday. Happy MLK weekend to everybody. Listen to Quest Youth Radio, one of the longest running radio programs for young people, WSOU. You got it going on, Brother Richard.
Yeah, well, it's people like you that helped me to be where I am. We were talking. I was talking about the people surrounding you. If you're the only one, if you look around in the room and you find yourself being the smartest one, maybe you need to change rooms. But I'm happy to say that I'm in the room with you, and I find you to be highly intelligent.
We should try. Can you? Now, who was around Martin Luther King? You know what I'm saying? Like,
Bernard,
I'm wondering.
Bernard Rustin, Ella Baker, just to name a couple of people. Ella Baker was in a number of different rooms. And we also, Tamir Davis, the Black Librarian, exposed us to some literary books that we can pick up that were actually authored and written by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. We were also informed that being a nonviolent activist turned, you know, violent for a nonviolent man. And so as we discussed those things, he also highlighted a documentary that he's doing with Hafiz Fareed, two men, the meeting of Elijah Muhammad and Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And so it was a very impactful and informative conversation that just took place before you came aboard this morning. And I want to talk about what motivated you to do that particular song, Ain't Gonna Let Nobody Turn Me Around. What inspired you to put that particular piece together? Talk to me. Talk to us.
Well, the recording, the concept came up in around 2014, and I went into the studio very quickly, 2015 of January, and Black History Month is one of the places that I wanted to, not just a month, but to inspire Africans in America and to encourage us to continue to thrive no matter what. You know, the first few hundred years, they didn't even want us to read or count or show intelligence or anything else. But we have become doctors, engineers, astronauts, teachers. They're the most important folk on the planet that get treated the least, as far as I'm concerned, amongst certain professions. And I wanted to honor the music of the civil rights music because we stand on the shoulders. I wanted it to have a funk, hip-hop kind of flavor to appeal to our young, to remind us to respect our elders that fought the good fight, and to remind my own peers like yourself that we should never find that music miserable, sad, or distasteful, because it put the fear of lions into those hearts of people who would do wrong for us. And they're like, they all know that same song. Yes, we do. And not just that, we know how to battle and win. So the project was called World Peace in the Key of Jazz. You know, it's an artist rendering for the respect that I have for the people who built this country. That's Black people. And we did. So we are due reparations. We're due so much. And no matter what happens in this world, we should continue to not let anybody turn us around from reminding and figuring out ways, even if it's a free college education for Africans in America or Black people in this country. We should never, ever get off mission to be certain, because every other group will come in and just pretty much ghost our situation, and that's a no-no. So, ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. I forwarded it to you. Maybe we'll play it next week or something like that.
Absolutely. But, you know, I owe you big time.
Well, now we all owe each other love. The recording that I'm up for, a Grammy nomination for the 2024 Grammys that take place February the 4th, is a song called Who Taught You That? Initially, it was written for Millie Jackson, and it was a sexual connotation. I don't, you know, that wasn't my thing. So I adjusted the lyrics because I wanted to speak to some of the violence that has happened in this country towards Black people, minding their own business, in church having their Bible study, and here comes an idiot mauling them down senselessly. And then up in Buffalo, they're just now deciding on the foolish person who killed all those folks in the supermarket, and the black folks in the supermarket, and they're deciding whether they're going to, you know, unlive him in the same murder. So the song, Who Taught You That and Said It Was Love? You know, did that happen at the breakfast table when he's listening to hate speech from the mother and the father? The mothers especially, because they spend the most time with the children. So I'm holding those women accountable. All of the Karens of the world, stop being a Karen and teach your children to have some love, and then we can have less violence towards black people in this world. Teach them to respect life, because they didn't create it. And it is important for us to stay on mission, that Martin Luther King's birthday causes us to get sober for a moment, and one whole month for black people. No, you know, I just want us to have every day all year and love each other. And then, you know, we are loving people. We love our enemies. We breastfed our enemies' babies, you know, because they're too lazy to suckle them. So we have to stay on mission. And some of that requires a little, as Brother Marvin said, anger. You know,
oh, you heard
never,
that.
Oh, well, you know, I love Marvin and Stevie. They were just iconic songwriters. I'm a songwriter as well as lyricist. People call me while I'm riding on the highway saying, I got to send you something. Can you give me some lyrics by next week? And I'll pull over on the highway damn near and write them something and send it back. Like, you did that already? I said, you told me the title, you know.
Okay.
I hear it in the song, and the song's a good song, almost writes itself. You pen it, but you feel it as a human being and an artist, and that's your canvas. So
okay.
I'm very proud of your canvas.
Okay, so I'm going to stop you because I see you on the roll. And I'm going to continue to push the roll, right? What is it that you tell your audiences about us being part of the human family? Run that down so that everybody knows that they're black.
Well, here we are. Mankind, the origins of mankind, politically correct humankind, but it's still mankind is out of Africa. And we all 99.9 the same genome. So that means we are related. That means we're family. So on this morning here at Quest Youth Radio, put your hand over your heart and say, welcome to the family reunion.
Welcome
one, two, three. One, two, three.
Welcome
to
the
family
reunion.
Absolutely. And it is a family. How long have you been doing this, Richard? Is it like 40 years yet?
Yeah, something like
Quest
that.
On Quest Youth?
Yeah.
You know, it's not to be taken lightly. You know, it's a 40th anniversary. So calling on all Quest Youth alumni, get together and send in some donations for the program that help to give you some time on the radio communicating, give you something to put on your resume that made eyebrows go up and say, oh, really? It's time for the give back. If we don't do it, then who's to give what we owe back to where we got started and developed. So, and I'm hoping that everyone listening will send in a donation to Quest Youth Radio and support this brother Richard Bay out of the great city of Newark, New Jersey. We both born and raised and educated in the public school system. Thank you to all of our teachers and educators. But right now we're talking about Richard and 40 years of Quest Youth Radio at Seton Hall's campus. Most people would have given up and not been on mission, but you are so on fire to be on mission and have young people experience radio and mass communication way before the internet, way before the internet. So congratulations to you.
Well, congratulations to you for being part of this particular program. And as we move forward and go forward, right now I want to say thank you again. I'm going to let you go, right, and start your day. But as I do, we're going to listen to Antoinette Montague on WSOU HD.
Grammy nominated.
Grammy nominated. Thank you, Antoinette.
Thank you.
time you people hear this record, my son will be born. And I gotta teach him about life. Listen to my little man. You could never have two little plans. Always bring your game direct. Cut out the middleman. Life is full of sacrifice. For truth, you might have to fight someone to bring you down. Cause they ain't living right. Be sure to use your mind, though. Look for all sides.
I hadn't anyone till you. I was a lonely one till you. I used to lie awake and wonder if there could be some.
Beginning of time with the possibility of taking a kind of general and panoramic view of the whole of human history up to now, and the Almighty said to me, Martin Luther King, which age would you like to live in? I would take my mental flight by Egypt. And I would watch God's children in their magnificent trek from the dark dungeons of Egypt through, or rather across the Red Sea, through the wilderness on toward the Promised Land. And in spite of its magnificence, I wouldn't stop there. I would move on by Greece and take my mind to Mount Olympus. And I would see Plato, Aristotle, Socrates, Euripides, and Aristophanes assemble around the Parthenon. I would watch them around the Parthenon as they discussed the great and eternal issues of reality, but I wouldn't stop there. I would go on even to the great heyday of the Roman Empire. And I would see developments around there through various emperors and leaders, but I wouldn't stop there. I would even come up to the day of the Renaissance and get a quick picture of all that the Renaissance did for the cultural and aesthetic life of man, but I wouldn't stop there. I would even go by the way that the man for whom I'm named had his habitat. And I would watch Martin Luther as he tacked his 95 theses on the door at the Church of Wittenberg, but I wouldn't stop there. I would come on up even to 1863. And watch a vacillating president by the name of Abraham Lincoln finally come to the conclusion that he had to sign the Emancipation Proclamation, but I wouldn't stop there. I would even come up to the early 30s and see a man grappling with the problems of the bankruptcy of his nation, and come with an eloquent cry that we have nothing to fear but fear itself, but I wouldn't stop there. Strangely enough, I would turn to the Almighty and say, if you allow me to live just a few years in the second half of the 20th century, I will be happy.
Never give up, always be ready to try. Walk your own walk and keep your head to the sky.
I want to thank you once again for joining us for another episode of Quest Youth Radio, better known as Quest Community Vibrations. And I want to say that music being like and sounding like poetry has a message. And history, like a diamond, shines clear to the truth. You see, words have meanings that we can comprehend, like definitions. And news can show us a chain of events that we may not always understand. So I'm asking you to pull back your musical curtain to see and hear the contributions of our diaspora. And you're sure to find our Quest moment, where today we attempted to make waves, indeed, vibrations. So I want to thank you once again for sitting back, relaxing, and listening to a different perspective of our community. A perspective of chains of events. A perspective of diamonds, an historical diamond, a prism representing a people. A curtains talking about the significance of the community and what works that an artist has done behind the curtains of the stage. And with that, I say to you, join us each week, each Saturday, from 7 to 8 a.m. Until then, I thank you very much, and I send you peace and love. And I finally say, I love you, and there's not a thing that you can do about it.
I could share with you.
WSOU South Orange on the campus of Seton Hall University, where there are no limits to what great minds can do.